you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at liveonfourlegspodcast@gmail.com or get involved in the conversation on social media. Join the Pearl Jam Podcast community group on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @LiveOnFourLegsPod.
Hey, since we're indoors, I'd like to try an experiment. Haven't tried it before. The end of this song, it does a thing that a lot of times we sing or people sing, and I'd like to see what whistling sounds like in the room with this many people whistling. Whistling. Wait, no, not that note. No, that's feedback. That's not whistling. And away we go.
You're listening to Live on Four Legs, the live Pearl Jam podcast experience, featuring
Mr. Stone Gossard. Fucking Cameron in the truck. Mr. Boom Gasper. You can call me Al, you can call me Ed, you just fucking call me, why don't you?
Everybody, now welcome to Live on Four Legs, the definitive live Pearl Jam podcast, and we are officially in our dark matter era. Yeah, this is the tortured podcast department, if you want to call it that. But I know that somebody else put out a record. I don't know who that person is, never heard of her before, but we do have a brand new record out. Finally, everybody has gotten to hear it at this point. Now you got to think, well, what's the next step? And there's an easy answer to that. Of course, the next step is tour, you guys. Why else do we do what we do? It's because we love the idea of the band going from city to city to city, play those songs, make those moments, connect with everybody emotionally, and that's what makes this community whole. And it's coming very soon. So today, we're going to do our first of 6 weeks of covering a show from the past history of the 6 West Coast shows that we'll be doing, not including the Bottle Rock Festival, but we'll be doing this Vancouver today, 2005, then Portland and LA and Vegas and Sacramento and all of them down the line, even a Seattle show. So it's a lot of stuff to get into. It's important stuff. And for anybody going to these shows, it's just building up the hype, ladies and gentlemen, building up the hype. But first, we actually did get a couple of live songs this week, so we got to talk about it. Head over to the Howard Stern Show. Randy Sobel over here, John Farrar over there.
Hello, hello.
It's getting to be around that time. Every time we get there, there's this like tingle in your body, or it's like you can feel that. You can kind of feel that, you know?
Yeah, we're almost there. Energy. We're almost there. I mean, the build up to the record felt like it took forever, but the tour is going to start, what, next weekend? So, yeah, we're close.
Look, I'm going to be jealous of everybody that's going to be getting the first half of these shows because I'm waiting until the last week here. So we're going to be hearing versions of all of these songs. I hope they don't leave anything off the table here. And we'll kind of know by the time that Seattle comes around, like, where these songs are going to be and, like, what the most anticipated songs are going to be. But first, we got a little taste of that anticipation on Howard Stern the other day, and the whole interview was pretty good. It wasn't a lot of things that we hadn't heard before. You know, they told the story of Better Man, which we had heard. They told the Mike and Stevie Ray Vaughan story, and I guess we didn't know that Mike was on acid during that, so that was kind of new. They told the Keith Richards with a Bowie knife story, and a lot of the stuff that Ed or any of the other guys would say in interviews or at shows and things, and anything really that was a part of the new songs was kind of already said in those articles. We know the story about like waiting for Stevie Wonder. We didn't know how long they were waiting. Apparently they were waiting 7 hours for them. They had 7 hours to write that song. But Stevie Wonder shows up when Stevie Wonder shows up, and that's okay. Is there anything that kind of stood out to you? I mean, the little thing about Mike living on Brandy Carlile's little area there and Ed not knowing anything about it was kind of funny, kind of interesting. But, yeah, you know, yeah. Matt didn't talk a whole lot. Jeff didn't talk too much. He talked about some of his favorite bass players. Stone talked a little bit about, you know, writing Alive and some of those things. But what do you think is kind of like the highlight of it?
I think the funniest thing was Ed's thing about axe throwing, where they like to wear like a catcher's mask on their necks so they don't accidentally like chop themselves in the back of the head. Like, and they said it wasn't like little hatchets, it was like full double-sided axes. Just the image of that made me laugh a little bit.
So they gave Howard the opportunity to pick some songs for them to play. Dangerous. And he got one of his requests. It seemed like he was really into verses, and he got one of his requests, which was Daughter. And then the other request was vetoed. And if you remember this from the last interview that Ed did with him in 2020, after the record came out and everything, he had said, "My favorite song is Glorified G. And I don't understand why you would go on stage and say glorified version of a song I don't like." And it was really glorified version of "I Hate This Song." It was one of the San Diego shows, probably the last time they played it in a couple of years, in 1995. And he brings Glorified G back here, knowing that I think Ed's kind of diplomatic answer on it was sometimes you just play these songs too much and you get tossed up on them sometimes. But he vetoed it. And I guess it made sense because he was saying that they did it the other day, and you get the illusion that maybe it didn't go too well.
Yeah, you should know. I mean, like, I get that everybody has their favorite songs, and you know, but that seemed a little like, obviously they're not going to do Glorified G. That would have been weird. I mean,
but we know that Howard Stern probably doesn't know that.
He should have tested. They should have figured that out up front or something. He should have asked them like, "Hey, what songs?" But even if they had played it, like, it would have been weird. I'm even surprised that they even played any deep cuts. I would have just thought they would have just stuck with the new stuff.
Yeah, it was just Daughter and Ledbetter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just Daughter and Ledbetter. So, and yeah. Like, I think Ed kind of whispered to Mike, "Hey, go start this for Ledbetter." But I think we got to talk about the Dark Matter songs. So, Scared of Fear and then Running. And Running, they said that they were going to do Scared of Fear. And then right after the song, he says, "Hey, 2 minutes. We got 2 minutes for this one." And they go right into Running. So, what'd you think when you heard these?
It's just so good to hear them in a room playing together again, like to hear these songs in the context that, you know, everybody's going to get to hear them when the tour starts. That was just what I wanted to hear, and it lived up to the expectations. I think it sounds so much better than the record sounds, just to hear them in a room playing together like that, and to hear Jeff Bass up front and Pierce Stone playing off of Mike and Jeff and Matt together. Like, it's everything that we talk about every week. That's why we come back and do this every week, for those moments, and to hear like the first versions of these songs on this. Like, Scared of Fear, I thought, was more melodic live than it sounded on the record. They can tell there was a little bit more of a groove to it. And then just the Mike McCready Show takes over.
Yeah, I thought great energy from both songs. Obviously, I've been a huge proponent of Scared of Fear for the last week or so since hearing it. And I just love that riff, and it did exactly what you wanted it to do for you live. It kind of juices you up, and the song really has a good drive to it. And yeah, you're right, Mike takes over, and Mike sounds terrific in this. But I think Running kind of surprised me a little bit, because I guess I just didn't know what to expect. I was somewhere in between like Lucan and Comatose kind of area here. And once you get to the end of it, it does sound like Ed does get a little Lucan-y on it. You hear, and these lyrics,
yeah,
these lyrics aren't available, unfortunately. It just stops after that little bridge part. I think it's like something about liftoff, set for takeoff, something like that. But you're right, Jeff's bass was ferocious in this. Oh, yeah. That's nasty. The highlight,
definitely. Mm-hmm. Especially on that intro. And it felt like they played it a touch slower, too. So maybe that was done on purpose to give him a chance to catch up and stick with it. Because, yeah, I can see them playing this faster and Ed not being able to keep up and it being kind of a train wreck. So it did feel like they played it just a touch slower than it is on the record.
But most importantly, how was Potato going to translate live? It was glorious. You heard it there. You did hear it. Especially second go around, you heard the Potato. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Potato is becoming a thing to the tour near you. We've already gotten people that have promised to bring Potato signs to shows and hold it up during that section and running. And if you don't know the origin of the Potato, well, I suggest listening to Running and you'll hear it. Think about it and you'll hear it. But it is glorious. It is becoming a statement for this podcast, a theme for the year. And if you're in on it, then welcome, my fellow tots. All right, so I think now we can get into a little bit about Vancouver and a little bit about 2005 and what kind of happened this year. It's pretty important. And I was thinking about this earlier today. Strangely enough, we've talked about how some of these in-between album years are freestanding in a way where they're not connected to the album per se. And it's weird to think about, but this is sort of the first year where you have that, because I think it's just a huge cluster from 1991 till 1996. It's a huge cluster. All the albums are very, very close together, and there's no real discernible, oh, well, this is not the Vitality. It's all part of the album sequence tours. 97, they don't tour. They don't do an extra tour for No Code. 98, big tour. 99, they don't tour. So there's not even, and I consider 2 years for me. 2 years, you tour for an album, and if you do anything after that before a new record comes out, that's a freestanding tour run right there. So Yield didn't have it. Binaural didn't have it. They didn't have anything in 2001 or 2002, really. You can say Riot Act in the following year, while it's not necessarily a tour, it's more of going out and being a part of the Vote for Change and it being dedicated to that. 2005 is really the first year where they have all the freedom in the world to not feel like they have to promote a record, where Lost Dogs came out like a year or so before, and they could play and utilize some of these songs, which had not been showing up in sets at all. And it does feel like the set list has some freedom. We saw with it last year, you know, doing stuff like opening up with Indifference and putting Who You Are in sets and stuff like that. They have an opportunity to mess around with it and see what works. And I think that's, while we all talk about how great it was for them to tour Canada, and we'll get into the Gorge in a second as well, I think that this is remembered this year for just being a fun, unpredictable set night after night.
Yeah, it feels like they could finally like step back and take a look back at their catalog and really pick and choose, really craft a set list just based on the entire catalog instead of having to focus on the newest record. It feels like they could go back and Ed had the freedom to just kind of go wherever he wanted to go. And that made it really exciting for people because, you know, the set lists were already changing and you're already getting that a little bit. But here, for the first time, like you said, he can really step back and go, okay, maybe tonight we focus on No Code. Maybe tonight we focus on Binaural. Maybe tonight we just mix it up. And maybe tonight threw some Lost Dogs in there. And like a lot of people followed this tour all the way across. It meant that you were getting really different shows every night because you never knew what you were going to get, because you didn't have to worry about, we know they're going to do Worldwide Suicide and Life Wasted 2 and 3, right? It really gave them the freedom to step back and dig into the catalog like they never had before.
Yeah, you just don't have to worry about that. And I think a lot of the freedom of them doing something new, going across Canada and going to places like Thunder Bay and Kitchener and some of these other places. I don't think they had been to Winnipeg technically before this. Saskatoon, a lot of these places, St. John's. St. John's got two shows, which is crazy. A lot of these places did not have the Pearl Jam experience outside of like Toronto, Montreal. A lot of these places were experiencing this band for the first time. And while in a lot of cases they would come out and play some of the nostalgia stuff, 10 and Verses and the stuff that really hits home with the crowd, they were just like, hey, you know, we're going to give you guys different sets and bring you home with something to talk about. It's not just going to be your hits. You're going to have a couple of gems in your pocket to say, hey, this is our only show in this city, and we got this. Every show has at least one or two things that are pretty special. So the Gorge was the night before this, and while the Gorge is really the tone setter for 2005, this is the true kickoff to Canada. And the Gorge is just a legendary show with so many things that they were not trying for the first time with the acoustic set, but they were going back to, which was not a thing at the time outside of Mansfield and Red Rocks. And a lot of the things that came out of that show are super memorable. Hello, Tom, come down, Tom. We'll have a little bit of that later, almost an homage, but it really set a good precedent that the band was going to be in a good mood as they go and do this tour. And what a better place and a better venue to kind of kick off with than that.
Oh, absolutely. It had to be exciting for them too, to be like, okay, let's just go out there and we'll just base the energy off what we get, and we're going to be doing different things and playing different songs. And you can't start it off any better. And at the Gorge, like, just a legendary show. And then they go back and do two more in 2006. You kick-starting it in Canada, you're starting at the very western corner, knowing that they were doing something they'd never done before. That had to add to it too. Like, it adds back that sense of adventure that they had went back in 1991, 1992, like, get in the van and go. Like, going to places they'd never been, going far, remote places, just to give these fans the taste of Pearl Jam for the first time.
And it's also Vancouver. It's like the Canadian hometown show.
Yep.
So being right above Seattle and all that, it kind of feels like they are playing to a crowd they're familiar with. So in some of these episodes that we're going to be doing in the next couple weeks, we have picked them because, well, it hasn't been us that picked them. It has been our wonderful patrons that donate to this podcast, and we can't thank them enough or love them enough for doing that. And this was easy to choose because I really love 2005, and although we've covered some shows from there, I feel like we got to do like a series or at some point where we can really dig our hands into it. It's been dispersed a little bit, but Matt Lang, who is one of our patrons, wrote in and requested this one and has a story for you guys. So I'm going to share this with you guys right here. This Pearl Jam September Friday night finally ended after 3 a.m. at a Denny's restaurant on Davie Street in downtown Vancouver, British Columbia. Hours had passed since they had finished the three-encore set at the formerly named GM Place, where the Canucks play, and just over 24 hours since the legendary 2005 Gorge show concluded. We figured if they could keep going, so could we. But at 3 a.m., after a visit by, quote-unquote, the village people, a regretted but necessary dine-and-dash, and still needing to find a hotel somewhere back in the city, the one we hadn't checked into yet, it was time to call it a night. Oh, Canada, and the days before smartphones. Great night, great show, and a sweet back-to-back. Shout out some friends here. Shout out to both Rizzes, if you're listening. One was next to me, and the other right in front of me, about row 20 reserved for center floor, with no pit back then. I asked them recently to share some of their thoughts on this Vancouver show for the pod, but they both said they remember nothing. Yeah, it was that kind of Pearl Jam night. So I'm from Seattle area and was at the prior night's legendary Gorge show. So these stories and perspectives are the two-night traveling north into Canada variety. Hitting the Gorge and this Vancouver show back-to-back was grueling. A Thursday night drive back to Seattle from the Gorge is about 2.5 hours. Then a Friday Seattle to Vancouver drive for another 3.5 to 4 hours, including border crossing. A note on the Peach Arch, the U.S.-Canada border crossing in the 2000s. Eddie had grumbled about it in the boots for years. I do remember that. It sucked. But in this instance, Canadian immigration wanted to see our Pearl Jam tickets, which would be fine, except this came at a time when your pair of hard copy 10 club seats could only be magically waiting for you at the box office at the arena in Vancouver. So they asked the follow-up, well, where are you sitting? Well, this was unknown since the 10 club seat locations were discovered at the gate right before the show. It took explanations of the 10 club ticketing system, pleading and convincing and saying, hey, look at our shirts and set list predictions, that we were actually going to the show. When we finally crossed into Canada, the anticipated slog up from the border to Vancouver and the infamous blinking green lights ensued for hours. So needless to say, when rolled into Vancouver proper around 6 p.m., it was time to go big. And that show kind of had that feel. Pearl Jam could have mailed it in a little bit just 21 hours after the legendary show, but they didn't. I've been to 5 Vancouver shows, and looking back, 2005 was probably the loudest. Good crowd. Here's some of my highlights. The early bits. Go, Animal, Save You, Given a Fly, Corduroy Run. The fourth ever B-Girl, and I believe that Blind Melon had played with Pearl Jam in 1993 in Vancouver. I think that was that Vancouver 1993 show that we covered not long ago. U? Yes, the letter U was a highlight. Nice tag at the end of Wishlist. The Hello Wolfgang chants, trending off the Hello Tom chants that was mentioned before. You can tell the boys were excited to kick off the Canadian tour with a bang. Hometown pressures were off. No, it certainly wasn't anywhere near 2005 Gorge ratings, but sometimes the journey there or stories during it make it a classic. And that's what this did for me. Thank you so much, Matt. Great stories. Ooh. And I always love a good border crossing story.
Oh. Man, can you imagine like them just pleading like, no, we're really going. I promise.
That is rough. Yeah. I mean, you can't ask for a worse scenario than having 10 club tickets and not being able to prove it.
10 Club didn't think of that when they started doing it that way.
How could they? Yeah. Be thinking ahead, right? All right, let's get into the set list that Matt requested here. We are going to start the show with the most common starter in the history of Pearl Jam, and that would be Release.
I'll see the world.
Official Canadian kickoff. This is the first song of the tour, of course. Ed changes some lyrics here to Oh Dear John, Can You See Us Now? Prior to that, he was doing a little bit improv vocal run that's a little bit different than usual, kind of in between the verses. And then he gets botched up a little bit when digging into sort of the crescendo of the song. And that's going to be a little bit of a theme that there
can be very much a theme, very much a theme.
There is some rust at this show, which is weird because I don't remember that happening at all at the Gorge show. Maybe that's one of the things where so many great things happen that you don't care, but I don't remember there being any rust at all. So it's not the picture-perfect rendition of Release that you know it to be, but it's a strong way to get your crowd invested right away.
Yeah, and it's totally in the dark. That's something to it, I think, too. Just you're not able to get the visual. You're just hearing that riff from Stone. And yeah, that's always really special. But yeah, the Dear John for Johnny Ramone is going to be a theme at the show, too. That's going to come back later.
Absolutely. All right, getting into the heavy part of the set. It's going to kick off with, you think sometimes after you do a series of a certain year in a certain era, that maybe for a little while you can get away from that and you can do some different things and talk about different things. But yeah, the first two songs in this are going animal. Because of course they fucking are. So yeah, I heard a lot of Jeff during Go, and it's very apparent in the mix. I feel like 2005 might be one of the best years for Jeff sounding in bootlegs. Every show that I've heard on this tour, I feel like I get that big Jeff presence. What do you think more about Go and Animal? You have anything else to add to this?
I thought this was a really good Cameron show. And I think that goes along with Jeff too. I think because they lock in together when the songs are at their best, Animal especially. And then, you know, like Matt had said, they just played less than 24 hours ago. I think Ed maybe showing a little fatigue here. Gives it to the crowd on Animal. Here, take it. It's yours. So you get to hear the crowd a little bit early on, which is cool. But after release, they're just getting everybody worked up here at the beginning.
Yeah, and I had to put Go and Animal together, but really, Save You is on the back end of the three, and Save You is the highlight. It's a ripper of a version, and they kind of like pump in the crowd noise a little bit. Everybody's clapping, and they're playing up to that. Like, they kind of rev it up just a little bit as they keep going on, and Matt's right, they were loud. They were loud during the show, and they were definitely loud during the sequence. Performance is excellent. There's a great visual of this. Now, the only camera angle that we have of this show is behind the stage, so usually we're looking at some hair, Ed's back, sometimes a profile shot of Stone if he's walking sideways a little bit, and then if Mike runs around, we can kind of see him do that too. But right when they break back into the final chorus, Ed and Jeff almost have like this amazing time jump together, and it was like maybe they started jump at the same time, but Jeff had so much more of like a wingspan that he came down a little bit later. But it was a really cool visual and kind of showed like where they were mentally and like how pumped they were to be doing this.
He's got those basketball player legs, but
for sure
I was gonna bring that up too. It's really cool. It's kind of over the back shoulder, but to me, I was more watching Stone and Boom. Stone absolutely just bopping during this song. And you see Boom kind of like, he does have legs. You get to see him kind of kicking his legs and like tapping his foot a little bit. So yeah, cool visuals on this. And like the whole band just into it. Yeah, great version.
There's going to be a theme with Boom coming up pretty soon. And at some point, you will see the change. And this will turn into a pretty good Boom Gasper show. So hang on to that thought and that tease. Given a fly corduroy section right here, the big soaring songs, the ones that you just want to inject into your brains. I loved in Given a Fly, you kind of always talk about how delicate something can be where it's on the verge of breaking apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that going right into the big build for the first chorus on this, I felt like that was right on the verge right there, but it like picked up, it found itself, and then just absolutely exploded into the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's very cool. I thought Jeff sounded great on this one as well. This was really a standout for me. But now knowing from that story, changing the lyric to "Thousands of Miles Made It Over the Border," I'm sure they were thrilled to hear that. Maybe the Pearl Jam van was behind Matt's car as they were coming around, and he made some notes like, oh, they had to struggle. We got to point out that we made it over the border. Or maybe they had the same problems as well. So nice little lyric change, appropriate for the story that we had, which is always cool. But this part of the set is just blistering.
And on top of that as well, 2005 is really the first time that they started to change that line, the smoke in a tree line, mm-hmm. to be something of the local variety. Because I think the gorge, I think he says made it to the gorge, had a smoke in a tree, and that might be the first time he ever did that. So it's starting a new trend. And after this year, stuff and giving a fly here that we usually get, like the scream of the well fuckers and a couple other things that Ed does, it wasn't quite there yet. It was keeping to more of the idea of what it was like on the record. But I think a year later, you get all of these big fan moments to go along with the big build of the song, and that's where it really takes a different turn. Corduroy following up, the intro is very interesting. Feels like you don't have those notes sort of ring out. It's not clean. It's a little more distorted, and it just doesn't feel like it goes anywhere. It's like static almost. That kind of threw me for a loop because Corduroy usually isn't that. But we do have a very filthy fill on the bridge for Matt before getting into the solo. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Of course, Mike taking over as per usual. So, yeah, I think Corduroy had a couple of lyric problems in there as well, but also it changed some inflection moments. But, I mean, it's Corduroy, and this is your happy moment. Nothing better than being in the Pearl Jam show here in Corduroy.
Yeah, and how about afterwards, you've been doing those 94 shows and used to hearing Eddie, but who are they chanting for after Corduroy?
Stone. Yep. Mm-hmm. This is the year of, I feel like this is maybe not the first year, but it's really prominent, the Let Stone Sing stuff. I think maybe after State College, when he did Mankind, they fucked up Mankind. I think maybe after that, it starts to become a thing. But yeah, a lot of nights on this tour, they're asking for Stone. So
and now he had two songs because Don't Give Me No Lip is out. So he doubled his output.
Right. Once they go to Ottawa, they don't do it much, but there are more opportunities for it. Ed doesn't talk a whole lot at the show, but he's going to stop and talk right here. He says, looking out the window today, I realized how much it looks like Seattle and how we really are close brothers and sisters. You look just like Seattle till the sun came out, and then the illusion was broken. It's beautiful. I don't know why we don't come here more often. You've already been good enough to make us want to plan a date for next Saturday. This is really, really good. Thank you very much. And that will go into Love Boat Captain. Now, here's my thing about Boom at this show. So this kind of starts here where I'm a little peeved because Love Boat Captain probably shouldn't change this ever. This is the time where they were playing around with Ed doing the riff to open the song instead of Boom seeping in with that B3. That's unfair to do that to Boom, for Ed to be like, okay, I'm going to start this, knowing that this is Boom's contribution to this band, an important one. And it just sort of got taken away from him. he'll get his moments later. He will absolutely get his moments later, but I felt so bad that they kind of had to do him a little bit dirty on this. That's what you want. That gets you excited for the song, and that kind of builds it up into what it is. The guitar here, it's just kind of like any other riff that you would hear, and it didn't have that mystique to it.
You know, I don't think it was a deliberate slide against Boom. I think they maybe wanted to try to make it a little more impactful by bringing everything in at the same time. I think maybe you were going for a more direct approach on the song. But yeah, I agree. Like, it's missing something, and then Ed just completely spaces on the lyrics. Aaron just loses it for almost the whole verse.
That's karma. But,
yeah, exactly. But the jam at the end is cool. The love thing, where things are kind of going back and forth, little call and response. But by the end, it's everywhere it needs to be.
That part isn't just cool. That's awesome. You know, he asked for it. He's like, you know, come on, everybody sing Love with me. And it's not one of those where they just kind of let it fade out. They bring the guitars back in and start kind of going at it again, and it can turn into almost another song in itself. Done that before a little bit, but this version, I do remember talking about this one when we did the Evolution episode for this, and I remember this being really cool. So yeah, really cool moment, and yes, Mike's solo sounds absolutely fantastic, and it gets to where that Love Boat Captain does need to be.
Love Boat Captain, take the rain. Steel restores clear. I know it's already been sung, but you can sing it with me. Love is all you need. All you need is love. Love, 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 love. Yeah.
Even Flo follows up on that, and let's just cut right to the solo with Mike flashing the Hendrix behind the back right as we begin on that, and that tells you that he is in full showman mode. And there are just sporadic moments in this, and I think when we get to Down, there is a moment for a reason where he's just spinning out of control, and he's like that unchained dog that we talk about sometimes, that animal. And it feels like he's playing up to that character in this, but this band jams on this, and it feels like everybody's coming in with something a little bit different and finding a way to mold it together that sounds great. You almost get that Matt solo at the end. You almost get that, but they just decide to go forward without it. And then Ed tells the crowd to sing it at the end because he says, you guys know the song much better than I do. And honestly, he's missed a lot of lyrics to this point, so he's probably thinking, I don't want to fuck up Even Flow, so you guys take it. Better Man and Half Full are following up on that. So I want to bring this up. Very rare that I do this, that I don't look at a set list before listening to a show. And I kind of did it on this one by accident. I don't really know why. I just kind of put the show on and just let it speak for itself. So when Better Man came on, I like did one. I gasped. I'm like, whoa, Better Man, the night song. Whoa, that's kind of really cool. I wasn't expecting that at all. I don't think in this era, or really any era outside of like the 90s, you're expecting a big time hit to follow up that Even Flow spot like that. And it sounds great. It completely surprised me, but also the version did too. It feels campy, but I don't mean that by like a, oh, kind of jokey way. It feels loose. And it feels like kind of a folky country version rather than a revved up rock song. And that happens with this sometimes, but of course what Cameron does on this prevents it from going full country at all, because he's just hammering away. This is one of the better songs for him on this night. And then Ed does a little bit of a tag at the end too that sounds really, really good. Very revved up version. They were pumped for this.
pairing Better Man with Even Flow here kind of like a two-headed monster here in the middle. And that goes back to what we talked about at the beginning with not being an alpha cycle. And they can go in and mix some things up. Like, you don't get this if they have to play six or seven songs off of a new record at the time. But yeah, the improv is like, if you believe in me, I believe in you. All I can be is true. Like, again, just adding some depth to the lyrics and to the story that we know behind the song, which I always love. Love an improv tag every time.
Those lines, I don't know if it's loosely connected with I Believe in Miracles, that's going to be played later, but we do know that Johnny Ramone's widow is at this show, so maybe it is on Ed's mind, and around this time, it's a year after his death, so he is still thinking about it, it's still going on, so maybe very loosely tied into that, who knows?
Could be.
Half Full is a great highlight for this, and usually you're looking at Mike for this, but honestly, I think my favorite part about this version is right when they kind of get into that breakdown, that dum da dum dum da dum dum, like a little bit of that, and then they kind of fall and trail off to the end because Ed is doing, he has that flash pan in his hand and he's doing The Shining and everything like that. That's really cool, but the way that they were building up to that moment, the way they started the jam and the way they started to execute was just fantastic, I thought. Especially, it felt like that part to go into it, just that one lone guitar, felt like that was going to be massive. It gave you something to look forward to. And of course, Mike is going to be the star of this, but that's something that maybe you're not recognizing when you think of Half Full.
This is a great performance, and like, it feels like whenever we talk about this song, which isn't enough, they've only played it 78 times, it's always a highlight. There's always something really cool to talk about on it, but they've never really given it a chance. Like, I would love for them to play this song 5 or 6, 7 times this year to like give it a shot, because it's always great. I think it would fit in with the Dark Matter stuff. It's got kind of that mid-tempo kind of stomp that a lot of the Dark Matter stuff has. I would love to hear this song have like a Garden or Wishlist style comeback this year. It's always great when we talk about it.
Well, you mentioned that this record is a MacReady record, so yeah. If they are not satisfied with their MacReady moments at these shows, then I think that could be utilized and everybody be satisfied with that, for sure. Ed's raising a toast to a new life about to happen, a little boy in the belly at this show who's about 3 or 4 weeks from getting out into the world, and he's feeling it right in front of the speakers, feeling vibrations. So we can confirm that this is his first concert. He's going to be born to two special people and have an incredible life. So let's, on a count of three, say, and this is, of course, following the energy of the night before, "Hello, Wolfgang." The same way he would do, "Hello, Tom, calm down, Tom." So, fun there. There was a little bit of trying to figure out who Wolfgang was or who his parents were in that email that Matt sent me. And my first thought was, that can't possibly be Eddie Van Halen's kid.
No, no.
He's older than 19. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Daughter wish list back to back here. Just for a second, I wonder if going into Daughter meant that Wolfgang is a girl, or maybe that their last name was Wolfgang.
I think it's just the parental theme of it, maybe.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, it's just a thought because it definitely tied in pretty well. But This is a daughter version that has a lot of pep to it. And it's the kind of version that I absolutely prefer more in live situations. This is not necessarily an uplifting song in its content, but you have to play to those big moments, the Rise Above It moment and everything like that. You have to play that up for it to work with crowds. You want them to go after that. And I feel like a good crowd like this really made the song work well.
Yeah, like the WMA tag always adds a little gravitas to it, but give me a really dark, moody version of Daughter, and I'm happy. But they've got Wolfgang on the mind. The Hello Wolfgang comes back in the tag, goes off on that a little bit in the end of the song, so that's nice. But this is not that kind of a show. This is more of a celebratory, kicking off the tour, let's go kind of a show. So it fits in with that.
Wishlist following up that. We got the disco ball rolling around. It's a very sweet version of Wishlist. It just has that feel of like maybe singing it as a lullaby almost, and with the theme of a fetus in the crowd that's gonna sprout into a young human being here, maybe they were thinking in that way of playing like another, you know, kind of sweet and softer song before getting into stuff that's not sweet or soft. I like the ending here too. There's a really cool Ebo section that kind of extends and goes on, and then we have a little bit of improvisation from Ed, almost lamenting that he's from a country that is off to war and that doesn't take care of their people all too well, and almost saying to Canada, like, thanks for being the good guys.
Yeah, it says thanks for the example. During the Bush years, he would go off on these kind of semi-political to very directly political improvs on Wishlist. And I think the spirit of the Wolfgang mentioned is still on his mind. He's got going in parental mode a little bit and trying to be a little more delicate with it. But yeah, he says, I wish I came from a country that never went to war. I wish I came from a country that took care of its poor. Maybe someday that'll change. But in the meantime, thanks for the example. So yeah, nice touch to the locals there to say, like, hey, you guys are doing it right. We need to follow your example.
And have we? Nope.
Nope.
Actually, in some parts of Canada, it's kind of become like us. So, moving forward, Lucan and Grievance are back-to-back here. And for Lucan, they came pretty damn close. It was, like, right at the finish line where Ed fumbled
last
the ball.
10 seconds, yeah. And he just gets completely lost in the last 10 seconds, yeah.
5-yard line, guys. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's rough. That's like, there was a Monday Night Football play, I think, where, or maybe it was like a Thanksgiving game or something like that, where somebody fumbled the ball. I believe it was a Cowboys Super Bowl game where they just ran down the field and they let go of the ball before getting into the end zone. It's happened a bunch of times, but that's
The Cowboys have been to the Super Bowl?
I mean, this is a 90s band show, and Cowboys were the team of the 90s, quote unquote. Mm. As I am wearing a Bills shirt right here, lamenting the fact that, hey, we lost 4 in a row, but at some point, the Cowboys were a good football team, and you didn't have to go onto Twitter where their fans were insufferable. But that is not part of Pearl Jam, so we don't have to continue on with that. And we apologize to the good Cowboy fans out there, which there are approximately zero. Grievance following up.
Piling on.
Had to.
Hey, I started it.
You know, Grievance following up on that, I always love what that transition is going to be, what the next song is going to be, because it always has to be something with the drums, like Not For You or Grievance, that makes it work like that. But this is not the best version of Grievance I've ever heard, and it's really not even close. It's not fierce. It has no intensity. It just kind of almost gives up on it a little bit, and they were sloppy on transitions. No growl at all. It's really tough to make this work if you're not going 100% in.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, it needs that kind of bite to it. And again, this is not that kind of a show. They still were playing it a lot in 2005. It wasn't until 2010s when it started to drop off a little bit. But Yeah, I hear you. Like, yeah, this is just something like, okay, the Lucan and Grievance combo, and then move on, because what comes next is really, really good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And there's a point to the Immortality Nothing Man combination here where they kind of take aside that speedball energy that they've had for a lot of these songs. And now they're pretty docile and delicate, involving some melancholy in both of these versions. Like, Immortality usually has that big moment where it has the big crescendo. And it does have crescendo in this, but I feel like it was more Mike playing towards the downtrodden side on this, because it just kind of has more of a plodding pace and then tries to, at the end, sort of pick up on that and give it a little bit of hope. The ending on it is good, but it's not this all-out drum clinic that we know that Matt can do. It does work for what the version of the song is. I will say that.
It was fine, and then the lyric trouble rears its head again. There's a little bit of a fluff again, but
he says, yeah, I mean, the sun died just to live in the second verse. Yep.
I mean, it's all about the emotion and the soul that Mike can put in that solo, and just every time that solo starts, you know that, like, he's not phoning it in. He never phones it on that. He's putting something special into that thing, and there's not a huge jam at the end like there would be in 95, or like sometimes there is now, but still just a highlight from the show. I mean, Immortality, whenever you get it, it's going to be special.
And I had mentioned before that we are going to get some Boom revenge for not having that Love Boat Captain intro for both of these songs, for both Immortality and Nothing Man. The outro, really, really good presence from Boom that you just don't recognize on Immortality. Nothing Man, he adds a little bit more of a presence, like right before the Into the Sun part. Like, you really get to hear like a vibrant Boom on this. And again, Nothing Man is more along the lines of a melancholy version, a little bit fragile and heartfelt, but it worked. It definitely worked for the situation.
Oh,
glad you didn't mean a Billy Corgan version. Yeah, Nothing Human was definitely more like relaxed, and maybe that's due to like Boone's influence there and being a little more prominent. But yeah, it definitely felt like they were taking their time on it and letting it breathe a little bit.
It was melancholy, but it sure as hell wasn't infinite sadness.
There you go.
All right. Three-headed monster to close out the main set right here, down and to do the evolution into a song that we've covered a lot as a show closer or a set closer recently, In Blood. I think Down following these two that, again, are more along the delicate side to bring you back up with a very poppy and positive spirit version of this song. It was the best way that you can come out of it. And I mentioned before that, you know, there were going to be moments where Mike just gets that catnip in him and he just spins out of control. He does that in Down. You can just see him and he's just spazzing all over the stage. It's really good.
Yeah, Ed's got his fist in the air for some of it too, like channeling some Howard's in there. That was pretty cool.
Potentially, yeah. For Evolution, Stone solo and the buzz on that sounded great. You know that you have a great solo, and the back end solo that I'm talking about here, when Stone continues that into the verse and he just plays off of that. He's feeling something good, continues it, and then sort of lets it kind of dissipate as the song goes on. And he did that here. I thought it was very cool.
We've talked about Mike so much, it's time to get... I mean, Stone had the chance earlier, and this is his first chance to really step up and take the spotlight, so yeah, always excellent.
And then we wrap up the end of the main set with Blood. It's not going to be like the Blood versions that we've covered the last handful of weeks. We're just not getting that. We're not punching holes through the stage. We aren't doing the big stomps. However, we are doing Atomic Dog, which is weird that we did a 1994 show series and didn't get Blood with Atomic Dog. They do. So it's not 1994, but at Ed's capacity for this show, it does feel like he's going in on this. Fire and Fury that you want him to have on a song like Grievance, I think he saved for this. And he's doing some spinning in circles and he trips over himself at one point. Just sort of flails around the mic. He's having fun with this and he's making it a little bit chaotic.
Did this seem like an appropriate set closer? I felt like this maybe wasn't the kind of main set that needed a Blood to finish off. Felt a little bit forced on this. I don't know that this is a Blood type of show.
What else could it have been?
I don't know. They've got the whole catalog to go off. If this is song 19 of the main set, like they could have adopted Evolution. I think that would have been more appropriate. Like, save Go for this. You know, Better Man, pull it back and do that. Like, something a little more anthemic than something as fast and furious as Blood. Maybe it didn't fit the theme of the show.
Well, Blood at the time was still pretty rare, and I think coming back from some time having some rust on it, so it still feels like a big moment. And there's going to be a lot of those songs that are being dusted off here in the encore. But for a Versus song that is very popular, that we don't get to hear too often, I'm not going to complain about it being in the main set. It's apples and oranges.
Yeah, it just felt like a weird choice with the songs that have been played.
All right. All right. We're at the encore. Let's pause for station identification. We have a couple of encores at this show, not just one or two. We get three. So we're not pausing for every single one, but we'll pause for this one. Want to thank right up at the top here, a good friend of mine who I ended up meeting in Sacramento 2 years ago. And it was funny because we, of course, were in Sacramento hoping that we would get a show and then going over to Vegas. And it was myself and Brian Anderson and his brother. Shout out to you guys. Great guys. And we were all just kind of sitting in a bar. And the Warriors NBA Finals game was on. I believe it was Warriors Celtics or something like that. And I was kind of on the lookout like, hey, you know, let's look for people with Pearl Jam shirts and let's kind of talk, because it seemed like a lot of people had dispersed by a certain point. And this was a little bit later in the night, probably around like 7 or 8 o'clock. And we see Ned come in with like a Boston Celtics kind of shirt that said Pearl Jam on it. Probably something that they sold at a Fenway show for sure. Definitely something they sold at a Fenway show. So we stopped him and he came to our table, hung out with us. And then it felt like that whole entire weekend we were hanging out together. We did, because he was going to Vegas as well. He went to Vegas. We did the Ferris wheel thing and the karaoke stuff and all that. So he's become a really good friend. We hung out in Chicago last year and that was a good time. So really cool to have Ned Lally join up on Patreon and join the Gigalect tier. Just good stuff. Love when the friends can pitch in and join in. So thanks so much, Ned. And of course, for joining up on Gigalect, that means he's in for the bootlegs of the week, which is one of the great polls that we have for our Patreon. Of course, there are other things like the episodes and coming up in the not so distant future, since we're talking about shows and their locations that we're going to very, very soon. We are going to be doing those instant reaction episodes. And this is a time where, of course, everybody's going to want to know what happened after the show and get the pure reaction of everybody that just saw something incredible. So what we're doing every show, just same as last year, there will be people on site that will be doing a reaction show. This year, the prominence of the people doing it, they'll be holding flags and stuff like that. We want to make sure that people get to see it and people get to stop. So if you're at any of these shows after, look out for us. Look out. I might be there at some shows that I'm going to be, but sometimes it'll be Mar, sometimes it'll be Joey, sometimes it'll be Jason, and kind of our crew that we've put together for this. So look out for just the Live on Four Legs stuff, because it'll be around and it'll be close to the venue as well. And stop in, chime in on the conversation, let us know what you think of the show. And then later on, you get to listen to it on Patreon. And again, this is the most popular thing that we do. Nobody else does this for Pearl Jam. There's no Pearl Jam beat writer in a magazine or anything like that. It's us. We are the ones. So you get that on Patreon, and then you can go to liveonfourlegs.com after that and look at the Concertpedia entries that John gets to work on that are very, very good. And you have the whole scope of what a Pearl Jam show is in 2024. So to join up on Patreon, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/liveonfourlegs or download the Patreon app, search Live on Four Legs, and there you go. And liveonfourlegs.com, as I mentioned just a second ago, and I'll mention in a second later, you go there, you click the Become a Patron button at the top, and it will show you the way. And that is all you have to do to join. Liveonfourlegs.com is also the spot where you can purchase your Dark Matter Live on Four Legs shirt. It is available, and sooner than I expected, the shirts are in my possession right now, so they are ordered to ship. Once you put in the order, I will pack it, I will ship it, and it'll come to your house for whatever the time amount of shipping that you pay for. So this is enough time before Vancouver happens that if you are ordering a shirt and want to bring it to Vancouver with you, head on over there today. If you head on over today, I'm sure it will probably get to you in time. But again, if you are looking to wear this wonderful shirt, awesome shirt, love it, can't wait to wear one out on tour myself. If you want to jump in on this, again, $25 shirt, which is really cheap for a shirt, always got to keep it cheap for the fans out there, and just represent. Just represent what we're doing and go out on tours, and then people can see, oh, that's a pretty cool shirt. Where'd you get that from? And we are doing pretty well with stock right now. So we have all sizes available, whatever you want. And again, I will ship once it orders. So liveonfourlegs.com, it's right on the top slider. It'll say t-shirt sale, Dark Matter t-shirt sale. You click that, purchase, and a cool shirt will be heading your way. Hope to see you on tour representing. Can't wait. All right, back to the rock. No conversation coming out of the first encore. We're just going to sit down and do our thing with Footsteps here.
Quick break too. Yeah, not a long break.
Not at all. No. Yeah, I wonder, because this is 2 hours and 15 minutes. I wonder if there's a strict curfew at some of these Canadian shows, because a lot of them were like this. So, yeah, this is the first of three. All the encores are going to be three or four songs long. This is going to be the only one with four. The rest are going to be three. But we're starting off easy with Footsteps. As kind of mentioned before, this is sort of the Lost Dogs, quote-unquote, tour. And we got Down a little bit earlier, and then we'll see another one in a second or two, and then one later. But yeah, it's also going back to the more fragile sounding songs that Nothing Man and Immortality Identity kind of had. And again, it seems like a theme here that on the fragile songs, you get to hear more boom. Boom sounds fantastic on this. So it's with the lighter stuff, and they kind of make it work. And the mic solo into the harmonica again feels pretty fragile. Just a good balance within a lot of the songs that we talked about that just exploded earlier. I think it worked.
Yeah, we are well into the harmonica era of Footsteps, and we would not return to the way it was before. But I can get this, like, you know, coming out with Footsteps into Small Town, you're like very deliberately saying, okay, pace yourself. We're going to be here still for a while. We're going to take it easy coming back. So you're telling the crowd, like, okay, hang tight. We still got a bunch more songs left. And Footsteps is always going to be a crowd favorite no matter what. It always gets a big reaction.
Yep, for sure. And then since that's a crowd moment, they're just going to go into another crowd moment with Small Town. But it's interesting. The identity of this performance, it's pretty folky, anthemic. No pandering, no attempts to get the crowd involved. It just kind of happens naturally. And that creates a really great atmosphere with the song. And then once the crowd starts getting in, it feels like the band starts getting into it a little bit more too. And you start to feel the weight of what that song's power has.
Yeah, it definitely picks up halfway through and there's a build to it. It starts out, like I said, a little more delicate, maybe a little more in the vein of the Nothing Man Footsteps type. But by the end, they're getting more anthemic with it and building it up to something a little bit more rockin' and crowd-friendly.
So here's going to be one of the first rare Lost Dogs that we have in these encores, and it's going to be a song that we don't talk about very often. One letter. And it's you, 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 it's you. Nice surprise to have an ultra Lost Dog in here, and the Canadian crowd definitely got treated to a lot of these type of songs as this tour went along. And this is not a song we talk about very often, but we are both very fond of this. This is a song that definitely is under wraps and has moments in it. Like once you get to the end and you kind of get to that bass part that's going to take you into the end of the song, it gets really revved up, and that's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I think it's great. And I think Ed likes the juxtaposition of having the longest title in the Pearl Jam catalog followed by the shortest.
He would.
Done on purpose there. But from the 2 feet thick review, evidently Ed had a lyric sheet that he was looking at. I couldn't see it from the video. It didn't look like he was looking down too much. But I mean, another one, you know, famously, they had to go back and listen to Napster to how to play it when they finally started playing it. But yeah, I think it's great. I think this is one of the underrated songs and appropriate that we should be talking about it on the week that Taylor Swift released a new album.
Not many of you will get that reference, but you should. We think that if Taylor Swift were to cover any Pearl Jam song, this would be it because of how poppy and bubbly it is. All right, fun version of Live is going to end your first encore here. And the ending of this really revs up, and the band gets to jam out a little bit. It's a fun version. There's a lot of fist pumping. There's a lot of hey chants, and the pace of it does feel a little bit more deliberate instead of the party pace that's just kind of all out and like all go. It feels like a little bit more like, hey, let's put the groove to this. But you see that entire floor just pumping while Mike was going off. That is worth its weight in gold right there. Very good.
Yeah, the ending absolutely destroys on this. Ed's just kind of standing there taking it in. While the solo's going on, he's kind of got that look like, I'm just letting this wash over me right now. This is a special moment. And then fucking Cameron at the end just absolutely obliterates it. Another part of a great Cameron show here.
Yep, we'll get a very good Cameron song when we dip into Encore 2, which is actually right now. But Cameron's not on stage for the first one. It is Ed, and it is Jeffy Guitar, if you want to say that. And a little speech before that, I think you know with Jeff and an acoustic what it's going to be. And I already mentioned lots of Lost Dog stuff. It's going to be the fourth performance of B-Girl. And Ed's just kind of communicating with the crowd here from where we're standing. Not only do you look good, but you're loud as hell. And Jeff and I would like to present you with a little gift here.
B-Girl, you're going to die. You don't wanna be famous, you wanna be shy. Do your dances on your own. Becoming a star will become your doom. Be good. Be a
We had a run of this at some point in the podcast where we couldn't seem to get rid of it, where it was on like every show. And sometimes in like the back half, like 2013 on, this kind of became more of a, you know, two or three times a year that they would do it, because at this point, this is the fourth, but they would end up overall as to this date, it's 26 times. So 22 more times since 2005, with more happening much later on, it becomes one of those rare songs that feels approachable to get instead of like, wow, this is a white whale.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it twice. It's been played more than you at this point. So it's just a little off the cuff, little throwaway thing that they like to pull out every now and then.
I've technically not seen it, but I've technically heard it because it was sound checked at Wrigley 2013 while I was outside waiting in the merch line. So
yeah, that doesn't count.
Doesn't count for shit, but my ears heard something, at least.
They had to sound check Jeff's guitar. I love the idea of that. Jeff, get out of here. We got to make sure that thing works.
Like he just couldn't steal stones.
Yeah.
It's a nice performance, a sweet performance, but anytime it does pop up, there's not a lot to make it different. You know, it just
depends on how good Jeff can keep up with the rhythm of that riff.
Yeah. And this one was just fine. Yeah. So let's get into some experiments here. Ed is saying to the crowd, he's like, usually at the end of this song, everybody is singing, but I'd like to see if you could all try and whistle. And Ed says, no, not that one. That's feedback. I think everyone kind of did that.
They give the shrill whistle. Yeah, that's not what he was looking for.
And then a little birdie pops in and whistles the melody to black. And that is what he's going for here. Yeah, these 2000 sounding versions of black are just classic. And we used to call it a Gretsch version all the time on this show. But when Javier stepped in and corrected us, thankfully, it's the National Resonator. So that's making that kind of smooth, classic kind of sound on that. And it's a very heartfelt version. Again, going back to some Fragility here, you know, this has a little bit of that too. But I think the story is the little birdies that can't necessarily find their song.
Thank you.
it didn't feel like the Whistling Experiment came off too successfully. I didn't hear a lot of whistling going on, and it felt like what I heard was not necessarily in key or in tune or whatever you want to say. But yeah, it didn't feel like this one came off very well.
Yeah, it had to encourage it a little bit. I don't think the crowd really knew, or maybe the crowd was just doing it so sparsely or not loud enough. But once Ed starts doing it, people follow along, but it's not like they came up with this beautiful choir harmony with whistling. It just was an idea. Ed had it in his head, and it backfired a little bit and was never done again. But
right.
I applaud the attempt on this, you guys. Again, we're going back to 1994 with Porch, because not that this is a 1994 version, but we got used to so many versions of Porch just being that revved up fast Porch. Fast, fast, fast. And now we're back, which we haven't heard in a long time, it feels, that slow burn jam that they do in the beginning of Porch. So it is interesting, after listening to all those versions, that this is back. However, this solo is very interesting, and it's going to be a Cameron Clinic. It's about sort of everybody creating space and finding a direction in order to make it cohesive. Matt keeps up that energy while Stone is taking a little bit of the lead in some of it. And nearing the end, it got really powerful. Cameron's just absolutely nailing this. He's surging in this, and the rest of the band is following up. And there's one point, I think Ed kind of looks back. It was tough to hear what he said, but I think he said, "This is like a small club." Something like that, just because of how powerful he was.
He's up on the drum riser, and he's looking to the people at the back, and he's talking about them like he would do, you know, a lot later on once they would start playing songs to the back. He's saying, "Oh, you guys are like a small club, you know."
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, drums in a small club too, like that has that relationship right there. But I mean, this gets pretty cathartic as Ed just keeps building up that ending and getting on top of the stage and singing towards the fans. It's very good.
Yeah, and watching Mike, too, just possessed over there during the solo, just really spastic, just lurching around, really putting all he's got into it.
Yeah, and this kind of is at the two-hour point, so it does feel like there are a couple extra thank yous and kind of acting like this might be the last song of the night and not coming back on, but the house lights do not come on, and we get three more here that are the party songs for any sort of set list. So Miracles is going to be the first one. Of course, we mentioned the Ramones tie-in. Johnny passed almost a year to the day, probably like a week after this would be exactly a year to the day. Eddie intros it as being a song from the greatest American rock band there ever was, which I think is completely true. Just going to throw that out there. And I know we're talking about... I know we're probably talking about number two right here, but there ain't no number two without number one. Let's just put it that way. And there probably ain't no 2 through 10,000 without number one. Just throwing it out. But this is a tour and a time period where they played this a lot, especially later on this tour when they get out of Canada and they go down to South America. They play, I Believe in Miracles, nearly every night because of the Ramones' impact down there in Argentina and Chile and other places like that, Brazil. But yeah, it feels good. And I think I kind of buried this, I guess, a little bit, but you got to think, the night before, the opener to that acoustic preset is this sitting down and doing the acoustic version, which nobody knew of its existence at the time. It was something that came up with, completely new take on it. And you hear on that bootleg at the Gorge, where once he starts singing the song, the crowd erupts because they have no idea what they're doing sitting down and doing this. So it was big at the time. Everybody must be talking about this after that night.
Yeah, and it's an interesting choice too. We don't usually, you know, talk about this, but I Believe in Miracles is like not a classic 70s Ramones song. It's like from one of their kind of mid 80s records that nobody really listened to. So another example where Ed went and pulled a deep cut out and turned it into something that Pearl Jam has kind of made their own. And, you know, they haven't busted this out in a while. It doesn't show up as new, nearly as much now as they did back then. But in the right moment, it can be really, really good. And this year, it really was. And you know, definitely a playing to Johnny Ramone's widow who's there. I think the review also said, like, when he's giving out tambourines, one of them went to someone in a Ramone shirt, so he's definitely got it on his mind.
We're going to close out this show with Baba into Ledbetter. And, of course, Baba O'Reilly, the Pearl Jam song that the crowd sings the loudest. Let's get real. That is the truth. They definitely bring it on this one. And when you have that very rare Encore 3, there's only one goal, and that's to throw that massive party. So, yeah, you just want to go back to the bus feeling good after the first night. And what better way than doing this song and absolutely taking over a crowd with this? And the people that feel the best are probably Jeff and Mike, who have a little routine going on in this.
They do. Yeah, they've got some little dance steps. I think Jeff kind of like pretends to be like a ballerina in one of those music boxes or something.
Oh, I thought it was a leprechaun.
Yeah, there's some of that too. But I have to give a shout out. There's someone in the crowd, and Matt, I hope this is you. There's someone in a gray shirt who is like pumping his fist so hard during Baba O'Reilly that he nearly falls over. Just throwing that fist out there, like heads down, just full on going for it. I love the enthusiasm from that guy in the crowd. So shout out to gray shirt guy.
I'm going to doubt it was Matt, because I don't think that guy would have made it till 3 a.m.
True.
Just throwing that true. Out there.
Yeah, that's true.
But Jeff and Mike weren't the only ones in on the dance, because Jeff goes hopping around to Boom, and Boom gets in on the dance into just a lot of fun. You can tell they're having a blast, as Ed is doing somersaults all over the stage on this too. Just fun. Lots of fun. Ledbetter, your finale. And in Ledbetter, you kind of see Ed up top of the stage, and you see a familiar face that's kind of sitting like on the rail, outside of the rail. And that would be, of course, his wife, Jill, is sitting there. And I thought that maybe there could have been a woman that might have been Johnny Ramone's widow. There was a woman in a fur coat that seemed a little bit older. I don't know if that was her or anything like that, but she was in the shot on this as well. And you do see a little bits and pieces of Jill singing Ledbetter and probably pretending to know the lyrics like everybody else.
And really heavy effects at the last part by Mike too. A lot of delay, a lot of some effects on, you know, normally he'll just sit and play that really clean and bring it in really delicately, but this one's a lot of effects, a lot of stuff going on the pedal board at the end of Ledbetter here.
All right, that is our first show focusing on the local shows that they'll be at in just a week or two. So why don't we kick off our top three right here with me picking top three, which I don't really know what to pick. Although this was a little bit of a train wreck, and although I have a gripe with Boom not being part of his song the way that he should be, I really loved how the way Love Boat Captain ended. I thought that the response with the crowd was excellent and something that you don't get to see very often, where it's extended and really brought back to life. So I am going to put that at number three, even though, yes, I'm still mad at Ed for taking that moment away from Boom, but Boom got his moments later in the show. He was an MVP of some sort, so I'm rather okay with it. For number two, I have a couple of ideas, but I think I'm going to say Better Man on this. Just because it just had that it factor. It just felt like it revved up to that big moment and created a great crowd moment in this. I like this version. It just felt really loose. Felt a lot of fun. Number one for me is going to be Save You in this. I thought Save You was just killer. Loved it.
All right. My number three is going to be Better Man. My number two is going to be Alive. And my number one is going to be Wishlist.
Okay, one shared moment right there. But now, who gets to share a rating here? Will we be on the same page? Will we be off a little bit? Well, we're about to find out. So, I don't think this is my favorite 2005 show, but this is right there in the middle, in the median of them. This is one of those shows, again, like you always think of kickoffs, but when you do think of kickoffs, you think sometimes there is a little bit of a rust, and there are songs that don't necessarily get off to the kind of start that you expect them to get off to in the eighth or ninth show in a tour. And that kind of holds it back just a little bit, like where you can tell there's trepidation in places. Some songs don't have their punch. Like I mentioned, Grievance doesn't really have their punch. But the good stuff from this show is very good. It is a very solid show. I do love this year. And it might be a little bit generous for me to give it this rating, but I do feel like it is an 8.5. So that's where I'm going to stick.
Ooh, that's high praise. Yeah, I'm not going to be that high on this show. I think it's a little disjointed. You know, obviously the lyric stuff is going on there. And I think it's just missing that one performance that really transcended everything that this one doesn't have. Like we just talked about, I know in our top three, you said you didn't really know what to pick. Like there's not really something to grab onto here that I think sticks with people and would last. I mean, you said the word solid. That's a good way to describe it. I'm right at a 7 on this one.
That is fine. The ratings are always subjective, so
entertainment purposes only.
That's right. But we continue on the path, as next week when we come back, it'll be only a couple days till Vancouver, and then they'll keep rolling along, and very soon after that will be Portland. So we are ready to do another Portland show, and it will be from the Binaural Tour in 2000. So getting ready to get back to 2000, which we did a little bit earlier in the year, but always great to bounce back to these. This one happened in that time period where they were just about to finish, like that run from Vegas onward, and even before Vegas at some of those shows in California, I believe. And there were some in California afterwards as well. But like that whole entire run, that back half of October, November is excellent.
That's going to be an interesting one. We're going to get to talk about Evacuation for the first time in a really long time. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, Javier loves Evacuation. He'll be thrilled to talk about that. So, all right. Well, that being said, we thank everybody for listening. And hey, if you've listened to this podcast, maybe for the first time, maybe you chimed in a little bit here and there to see what we had to say on shows that you really like, and maybe you just haven't subscribed to it, then I encourage you, please, on your favorite platform of your choosing, please subscribe. Head on over to Spotify, head on over to Apple, head on over to YouTube, and just hit that subscribe button, and then you'll get to see other episodes that pop up that might kind of feign your interest a little bit. And if you do like the show, you want to take it a step further, free to give us a rating. I feel like we deserve the 5 stars. So that's over on Spotify. They have a 5-star rating system, and over on Apple Podcasts as well. And if you want to take it a step further, they all have places where you can comment. You can comment on individual episodes in Spotify. You can also comment, of course, on YouTube, because commenting on videos is, of course, the way of YouTube, but also the Apple Podcast comments as well. I feel like that's the big one, because that is right on the main page. And when people are looking for something, they want to scroll through, see what people said. And if they get to see a lot of their great memories were told, then hopefully they get to join in, they get to find a show that they went to themselves, and they get to rekindle their memories as well, because that is what we do this for. We absolutely cherish the fact that people can come here. If anybody tells me this, that like, you know, you guys have rekindled me with a show that I don't really remember much of, and there are people that have been to like over 100 shows that have said that to us, then we have done our jobs here, folks. It is as clear as that. All right. With that being said, this may be the end. We're here, but not for much longer. And although we may be parting ways, miss you already, miss you always. We're creeping up towards this tour, and hopefully maybe we get some surprises in the next couple weeks. Who the hell knows? But until then, see you on the pod.
Hello, Wolfgang.